News and interviews from your community every morning on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center couldn't be more fabulous as our producer, doing extra work and legwork today and clackety clack work. So we appreciate all of his help and hard work at all times. On the news line with us now is Nikki Young. If you look at her business card today, it says Interim Associate Provost for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. But catch that title while you can. At this time next week, she will be the Associate Provost for Equity and Inclusive Excellence. And we'll have a new set of job duties, and it won't be long before she has a new set of accomplishments. So thank you so much, Nikki. First of all, congratulations on the promotion.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me in this morning.
I do appreciate your calling in and checking in on this topic. Introduce yourself a little bit as to maybe just a little bit about your background and then what the Associate Provost for Equity and Inclusive Excellence will be doing.
Absolutely. So, you know what? I usually describe myself as a scholar teacher advocate. It's language that we use sometimes in the academy, you know, a three-dash sort of description. And basically what I do is think about and write about subjects related to race and gender and sexuality, and I do it through the lens of ethics because that's where I'm trained, right? I was trained as a Christian social ethicist, and I use philosophy and theology to think about contemporary issues, social and political phenomena through the lens of morality. So I ask questions like, you know what? What are people doing to thrive and flourish? Or how are people trying to live good and joyful lives in the face of oppression or in the wake of oppressive histories even? I ask things like, what does it mean to be a human person with a particular kind of background and set of experiences in a world that doesn't value everyone's personhood? What kind of values do we bring? What kind of morals do we have? What kind of practices help us to simply be? So I don't just think and write about those things. I also teach about them, you know. At Bucknell, my department originally was Women's and Gender Studies. So there I would focus on gender and race and concepts like intersectionality or feminism to ask those exact questions. But right. Then, as an advocate, I'm also thinking about ways to support people, right, to enhance the experiences of people who might be marginalized based on identity. So this title change gives me a chance to do all of that in one. I think the advocacy is going to take the sort of first rung of import or priority, but that's what I do basically.
Well, I used to think of Bucknell as a college where students would march into classes in the fall and learn a lot and then march out at the end of the year. But really, the whole university community is trying to affect positive change in the whole broad region around here, trying to help out. And then also with these young people, sort of mobilize the next generation to really make some, you know, to continue the positive changes that have happened in the past. Give us, our audience, some sort of a sense of the catalyst that the university's trying to be and that you're trying to help affect to make sure that growth and progress continue.
Absolutely. You know, I think the university is interested in helping generate critical thinkers who are community-focused and community-involved. And one of the catalysts is that Bucknell recognizes that we are a member of the Susquehanna Valley community, right? We want to participate in helping people thrive. We want to participate in learning about one another and our cultures. And so we have, you know, work in the coal regions. We have work in and out of the prison systems. We're excited to engage in civic work that thinks about justice from a variety of positions. We work with Transitions, the organization. But we're also thinking about this in terms of, like, social and political race relations here. What are community members able to illustrate to us over at Bucknell that is useful in our classes, and what then can we also share from our classes and what we're learning with community to enhance relationships? I feel like no education is valuable if it doesn't produce better sets of relations and better ways for us to be together. So I think the university is really focused on trying to make this education valuable and practical and invested in the community that it comes from.
Well, I hope and I think our nation's at one of those major pivot points where it turns and makes a turn for the better and makes more progress and more voices get heard and more subdued individuals, whether it be males or females or members of the LGBTQ community or blacks or whatever it is, any minority or any people of color, end up with greater voice at the conclusion of this. It also leads to some soul searching. Occasionally, folks who may not have thought as much about the problem say, what can I do? What should I do? Should I be listening to this or that or watching or maybe heeding some advice from some of my friends? What can folks do as our whole community and our nation moves forward here?
That's really a great question. I think there are a few things that people can do that are more simple than you think. So one thing is to investigate your own biases. So a common set of language that we use in the diversity, equity, inclusion world is about implicit biases, right? The sort of things that we're doing or thinking that we're not quite conscious of. But some people have critiqued that and said, actually, you know what, we are conscious of these biases. We're pretty aware of what's going on. And so the first thing I would say is to try to investigate or examine what those conscious or unconscious sort of leanings are. Where are the prejudices coming from? Not just to say what their root is, but ask why. Why am I or why is my family invested into invested in racist or sexist or homophobic or ageist ideas, right? What is it? How am I benefiting from it? How do I contribute to it? That kind of work, that sort of initial investigation, is hard work, but it's absolutely worth it because it lets people tear down the walls of distrust between themselves and their colleagues or their friends or community members, but it also allows folks to start from a place of truth, right? So really think about what it is that makes us kind of invested in ways, in systems of oppression and ways that we're not thinking about. And the second thing I would say is to listen. Listen to everything you can. Listen to people's stories. Listen to audiobooks. Listen to podcasts. Listen to radio shows like this one, right? Listen to music. One of the things that we do in our house is listen to jazz and soul and blues artists from the 50s and 60s in particular, right? Take in some Sam Cooke and some Nina Simone. But really listen to how folk singers and blues singers and especially folks who are thinking about their social and political climate articulate that through art, right? Listen to the artists and pay attention to what's happening. And the reason why you want to listen, I feel like, is because sometimes it's difficult to take in the histories that people give. So we might know, let's say you and I know about facts, right? We know histories that have had to do with segregation or even slavery. But sometimes listening to people's stories help us understand and believe the impact of those histories on current situations and lives. So listening is a huge bit of it. And then the third thing I would say is read. I can give you a list of books. I don't know if you want to hear some of those, but absolutely read. And, you know, you can read something as short as a set of tweets. You know, the youth are very active these days on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and other social media outlets. But there are also really wonderful books out. So I'm happy to give you a list of those if you'd be interested. But those are three things you can really do just to get going. And once you do that work, then you might partner with other folks in the community to say, how can I be involved? How can I help?
We got a partial reading list last week from Dr. Stacy Pearson Wharton, one of your colleagues in academia, last week. But it isn't light beach reading. Although she did say that she did read some of these books on the beach, it's heavy stuff. You emerge a bigger person than when you lay down in the sand. But
that's true.
But we would invite folks to review that. Examples, folks around here a lot of times say, I'll give you the time of day. What are examples of systematic racism that we should work on? You know, unfair or discriminatory interactions locally. What are some examples around here?
Sure. So one example, systematic racism is a thing that we use the language systematic because it's showing up everywhere, right? It's all around society and police or in practices. of other institutions like banks and schools and companies and governments. So let's take a school example. You know, we all learn how to draw our hand in maybe kindergarten or first grade or even preschool, and put the little turkey paper on it to tell us about Thanksgiving, right? It's a part of the narrative that we get about how the country was started, and, you know, it's founded on principles of exploration and freedom and manifest destiny, right? But it's a severely problematic narrative that absolutely dismisses complex sets of realities like genocide and enslavement that go along with it, right? The context of colonization is totally forgotten about in that history. And so we tell the kids in our schools, and this happens from kindergarten all the way through high school, we tell a story about the beginning of this very country from a perspective that absolutely dismisses and erases and even sanctions the violence against the indigenous and native peoples of the land, and also totally dismisses the lack of freedom that enslaved Africans had when they were brought here. So what makes that systematic is that we tell that story from the perspective of sort of a white history that doesn't have to account for its relation to other folks. And we do it in a way that everyone believes it. It's ingrained in the schools. And so a narrative that's more robust than that, but that has to do with other details, is seen as other, right? That's an example of how we might tell stories that then has a significant impact on race relations. But that's a school example. A more contemporary example might be something like the overwhelming number of black and brown people, men in particular, in the prison system in relation to the population. So if our white population is, you know, maybe 60% of the country's total population, and they make up 30% of the prison population, where, you know, just about 12% of the U.S. is black, and they make up about 33% of the prison population, I mean, that says something significant about how we are imprisoning or incarcerating people of color in particular. And unless we say something like, you know, black and brown folks are inherently more criminally oriented, which I don't know if people are saying that, then we must say something about our justice system, the ways that we're thinking about law, the ways that we're putting people in jail, and so on and so forth. So those are two kind of distinct examples of how systemic racism works. Now, we might see a little bit more clearly in housing and the way that people can inherit either inherit money or inherit debt, and that's generational, and it's also very very much parallel with sort of race relations and class. So those are a few examples.
Well, thank you, and we'll have to stop there. There's so much more to say about this. I have another set of questions on my proposed list of questions that we didn't get to. So I have your email. We'll include Mike Ferlazzo on that, who gets extra producer credits for making sure that we met up today. And as you get oriented in your new job, please let us know when you're ready to check back in. We'll do more of these questions and elaborate more on this. We'll get you a chance to do the reading list, and we're going to put folks around here in front of an opportunity to listen regularly to your remarks. So I hope that you'll check back in and help us out often. Thank you so much, Nikki. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
I do appreciate that. Okay, so Nikki Young, right now the interim associate provost for diversity, equity, and inclusion at Bucknell University, and soon going to be associate provost for equity and inclusive excellence, and that begins August 1st. So her title changes over the weekend, and she's made herself available to check in regularly. So hopefully we'll start to work through some of these topics and continue our coverage of this really a major pivot point in our nation.